And welcome to Here We Stand. I'm your regular host, Kevin Ann at Eagle Strong Voice. It's April 18th, and it's the day before the anniversary of the first shots at Lexington and Concord, April 19th. We celebrate this every year, of course, because then as now, our own shots have been fired that are heard around the world. The shots against a greater tyranny than has ever been known by humanity, which is now at work. The words of Captain John Parker, the Concord militia, he said, if they mean to have a war, let it begin here. Well, we know that we are in a war now. It's begun, and we draw a line in our hearts and minds saying, no further. The war has begun, then let us take it seriously. And you know, folks, when you realize the situation you're in, and you don't have illusion anymore, the illusions of peacetime, where there's options, where there's places to hide, we don't have that anymore. We can't hide anywhere. We have to face what is. We are at war. We have to face that reality. And that gives us the courage and the resolve to continue. Because a little bit of history, don't forget, I mean, those dates, April 19, 1775, that's always held up of when the revolution began, but it didn't. It was preceded by many years of struggle before that. And to give you an example of that, just over the border in New Hampshire and Vermont, the Green Mountain Boys had been closing down Crown courts and burning up the mortgage deeds that the New York real estate parasites and their London banker backers were inflicting on the farmers of that region. Well, that entire region was under financial control of the banks. So what did? They went and they chased the Crown judges down to the ships, sent them back to England, and burned up the mortgage deeds and shut down the courthouses. They did that, and it's only because they did that kind of action that they were able to take action later in the Revolutionary War. So that's the kind of thing people have been doing all over, more and more, claiming the common law courts, establishing them as a genuine authority, like my ancestors did in Ireland during the Irish Civil War, where they created their own Brehon Gaelic law courts alongside the Crown courts. That's what we're doing all over the Republic of Canada. You can follow our work, republicofcanada.ca, murderbydecree.com, and please write to me, angelfire101@protonmail.com. And don't forget, folks, write to me as well with your donations, because I have now a legal defense fund. I have a fund building up to support not only me, but others who have been targeted by the COVID police state. Now, today I'm going to do an update about that. I'm going to play an interview I did recently with Sarah Westall from Minneapolis, which describes some of that. I'm going to get to that in a few minutes. But before that, I want to give a little bit of background as to why these attacks are happening now. The West Coast Grand Jury convened under the jurisdiction of the Republic of Canada over 2 years ago has come up with some really startling stuff. And in fact, it implicates directly the minister responsible for, quote, public safety and COVID preparedness, Bill Blair, former police chief of Toronto, somebody who was named as a chief human rights violator during the June 2010, the G20 summit in Toronto. He ordered the police to break up those protests and caused what the Canadian Civil Liberties Association has said is the biggest human rights violation in Canadian history, where over 1,100 people were arrested, held without charge in jail, all done by this Bill Blair guy, who's now your public, well, not your, because we're not part of Canada, but he's Canada's top cop, the public safety minister, and he's one whose goons have gone after me with these false and fraudulent COVID isolation orders, which we've faced down. And he's also in the company of two other politicians who I want you to flag, because I love the saying, which we should always take to heart, evil is never abstract. It always has a name and an address. Well, here are some of the other names, not just Bill Blair, but his partner in crime, Senator Larry Campbell, and former federal cabinet minister John Reynolds. Now, we're going to be talking briefly about Campbell, Bill Blair, and John Reynolds, because they're all part of the same really interesting cabal that links the crimes going on the West Coast with what's going on today with the whole COVID police state. And I'll just give a little brief summary of that. These three individuals are tightly connected to the China lobby, to drug trafficking, money laundering through what's called the Great Canadian Gambling Corporation, the River Rock Casino in Richmond, British Columbia, which the Vancouver police named as the chief money laundering agency for Chinese drug money. Well, guess who are both advisors to the Great Canadian Gambling Corporation, Larry Campbell and John Reynolds. It gets worse. They're also, along with Bill Blair, intimately connected with the largest corporation in British Columbia. Can you guess what that is? It's called the BC Investment Management Corporation. It invests all of the pension money of government employees and other people in BC. Guess what? It's got assets of over $135 billion in 2017. And part of its portfolio includes 69 different Chinese companies, including the Bank of China, and agencies that are tied to the liquid natural gas consortiums that are sucking dry energy, transporting it over to China, and tied in with the missing Aboriginal families in that whole area. Because as we've documented previously, if you trace the route along the so-called Highway of Tears in northern British Columbia, it's very close to the liquid natural gas sites. And one of the guys on the board of directors of PetroChina, who runs those LNG sites, is a very general running organ trafficking prisons in China. Well, early on, 20 years ago now, when I began in the downtown east side of Vancouver, we had our own community investigation into missing people. And we were talking to reporters and cops who were telling us that the bodies of the Native women found were missing organs. But, of course, that got scrubbed out of the media and the court reports. And yet we have more and more links tying this organ trafficking, the money laundering, the criminality going on in the West Coast. And again, these three guys, their names keep showing up like dirty socks. Senator Larry Campbell, Public Safety Minister Bill Blair, former top federal minister John Reynolds. Reynolds himself is interesting because he's been part of this draining of wealth out of British Columbia towards China for many years. He was involved in water export companies that got illegal exclusive rights to export water. He tied in the British Crown. Prince Philip, who apparently died recently, and Queen Elizabeth were personal investors in water export companies through the Royal Trust Bank of Switzerland. John Reynolds was key to that. Well, it's giving an example of the drain of wealth going out of Canada to China. In 2020 alone, by that date, $42 billion worth of steel construction jobs had been shipped over to China. The Trudeau government has removed all restrictions on Chinese investment in Canada. They have allowed, through the Foreign Investment Protection Act, which was the first thing Trudeau ratified when he got into power, that FIPA Act allows China to station their troops on Canadian soil. These are all acts of treason being done by the very people forcing masks and distancing on all of you. And I often say to people, if you believe Health Canada, why would you believe them when they sterilized and tortured to death countless Aboriginal children for generations in their Indian hospitals, forced vaccinations for the last 150 years on Indians on reservation, and now they want to do it to you? So I often say to people, why in God's name would you go along with this criminal government? Another little tidbit I want to mention is that Big Pharma is very tied into a lot of the criminality going on in China and in Canada. Roche, Pfizer, and Novartis, the three top Big Pharma companies, are very connected. You can see this online. Big Pharma does tissue sample testing. They create drugs to prevent rejection of new organs. They transport and store organs obtained from prisoners in China. So Big Pharma is tied into this whole organ trafficking business, as are these three politicians through some of the things they've been naming. Final thing I want to mention about Bill Blair, if you do some research online, you'll see that former RCMP director Julian Fontano, Bill Blair himself, all the former police chiefs are now heavily into the legalized marijuana industry. And there's a thing called Votus Pharmaceuticals, which, again, Bill Blair, Larry Campbell, and John Reynolds are all investors and directors in. And they are legalizing, well, it's interesting, they're legalizing marijuana, but they're not decriminalizing it. You see, they allow people to still be arrested for it, and yet they're personally cashing in on all this. And here again, Bill Blair, the guy who's chiefly responsible for that, also responsible for issuing fake COVID orders against yours truly and anybody else who points out their criminality. So that's a little bit of what we're dealing with, folks. This is some of the evidence that has been surfaced by our grand jury investigation. It's going to be systematized and put online. The grand jury was to meet, but of course the COVID attack came down on us the very week we were organizing that. But that truth cannot be buried. It is coming out more and more. And that's a little bit of the background as to why the attacks are coming down on yours truly. If you want to read more of that, don't forget, I issued a report to the world in 2017. It was called A Report on the Continuity of Genocide in Canada. And this was issued to governments all over the world, to the media. President Vladimir Putin got a copy, and in fact, recently there was another appeal made to him on our behalf for him to monitor the situation in Canada and the attacks. And we have requested European and Russian peacekeepers and human rights observers to come to Canada, to Kanata, and protect those of our people on the front line who are risking their lives to bring out this information. And don't forget, we have had many people on our movement, especially Aboriginal people, killed for coming, bringing out this truth. So this is a life and death matter, and we need all of you on board with us now. Again, write to us, republicofcanada@gmail.com, murderbydecree.com. You can see more of this background, republicofcanada.ca. Now, we're going to play that interview I did recently with Sarah Westall. It gives some of the background as to what's going on now. We'll be back with more after that interview.
Hi, Sarah. It's great to be with you again.
You are being persecuted and hunted down by the Canadian government. Actually, it's probably by the globalists and the powers that be and behind the Canadian government. But you are being hunted down on false COVID baloney. We all knew they were going to use COVID as a means to make up trumped up charges. And you are one of the first ones that are coming out, the high profile people who they're doing this with. Can you explain what happened in your situation?
Yeah, it's quite amazing, the turn of events. But anyway, on March 30th, I tried to enter America because my father in Florida is very sick. He needs my help. And I tried to enter on compassionate grounds, and they regretfully turned me down. But I never got out of the car, and so they told me that there's no reason you have to quarantine. You never actually entered America. So they gave me a piece of paper to that extent. This was at the Blaine, Washington border crossing. They gave me a piece of paper confirming I never entered America. I drive back into Canada, hand it to the woman. She nods, checks it out. I say, do I have to quarantine? And she said, no, you're free. So I drove back. 3 days later, I get a notice in the email from COVID Canada that I've come back from another country and have to quarantine. And of course, there's no way you can respond by email. There's no phone number. You just order and you have to quarantine, right?
The black
so
hole.
I figured I could work this out. I began to quarantine. And but then I realized that, if you go along with a fraudulent act, legally, it's not a good thing. It means you're colluding in your own destruction. So after 3 days, it was kind of, the problem was solved for me because I got another notification email that said 10 days has elapsed, even though just a few days had elapsed. And so I could see they were just making stuff up. And they said on the 10th day, you have to do a test for COVID. And again, it was fraudulent. I caught them in print lying, claiming that a few days was actually 10 days. And at that point, I realized I was absolved because, you know, from any responsibility towards them, because when they're lying openly in print and defrauding somebody, it negates, under the law, that negates all agreements, all obligations. So at that point, I realized I was free. Unfortunately, at the same time, they sent one of their goons around to the location that, you know, I used to live in Nanaimo. And this was a guy without a uniform. He didn't say who he was. He said he worked for a private security firm for the government, but he wouldn't say what that company was, wouldn't produce ID. He just wanted to know where I was. And the person who answered the door wouldn't tell him. And so he spent some time filling out paperwork and everything. I was then notified that I was expected to report because I was in violation of COVID. And at that point, they can arrest you, put you away for 6 months, fine you for $100,000 or more. Here's the thing, though. This kind of harassment has been ramped up because that whole chain of events coincided with the fact that that same week, we were to convene a grand jury investigation into the very politician responsible for the COVID agency, a guy called Bill Blair. He's a former cop. He's the head of, it's called Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness for Canada. He's in charge of all the police, the border, COVID preparation. You know, he's like the top cop for Canada. And he was named in an indictment that went out from our grand jury because he and several other government ministers have been named as somebody working directly with China on the west coast of Canada, to in joint military maneuvers, in the arrest of people, the driving of native people off their land to get resources. These government ministers, including Prime Minister Trudeau, the Governor General Richard Wagner, they're all named in this indictment. So one of the guys named in the indictment then sends his goons after me to try to arrest me for a bogus COVID violation. So it was pretty blatant the way it's happened. And it kind of surprises me, Sarah, because normally they tend to shoot at the people around me rather than directly. But now they feel so desperate that they feel they have to go after me. I think it has to do with this grand jury indictment that had been issued at exactly the same time.
Well, it looks that way. And the whole COVID thing, we both know that's just such a joke. I mean, my God, to go after somebody like this, this is an extreme abuse of human rights. And they are using this COVID as an excuse to abuse human rights. And the fact that they're even getting by with this stuff is incredible. But you are a target, and you're a target because not only the grand jury, but also because you are outward and well-spoken and trying to get people to have the courage to stand up against this tyranny.
Absolutely. And of course, this has been going on for many years in my life, but you're right in that it's getting much more severe. The COVID is a camouflage for, as we know, a kind of a global corporate police state. But they use alleged COVID violations as a way to target political dissidents. And this has been happening to other people as well. I know I've got a lot of contact with Aboriginal people, people living on the street. And I routinely go down there in Vancouver and check out their situation. They've been grabbing, and one of my friends, Frank Erminskin, he's a Cree elder who worked with us for many years in the protests about the genocide of children in residential schools run by the churches. And Frank was telling me the other day that the police came in and did a big sweep. They just grabbed a lot of people off the street. They said, you're in COVID violation, and took them away somewhere, and nobody knows where they are. So, I mean, this hits a lot of people. It's just that, in a way, I'm glad it's happening to me, because when they go after a public figure who's so well-known as me, it really backfires on them, because then a lot of more people wake up than if you grab an anonymous Indian on the street, right?
Yeah, that's why they do it. Why they do the anonymous people, that's why they're doing the border, you know, the border of the United States where all these children are coming without parents. It's a bonanza for the trafficking cartels and for the politicians and the globalists that are all connected to that. But going after you or a public figure opens people's eyes. The border kind of is too, because it's so obvious. But I've also read that and somebody else wrote something that you said that your phone and your bank accounts were shut down.
So the very day that I got notified that I had to report for COVID testing, you know, that pretending that 10 days had somehow elapsed when it hadn't, that very same day, within a few hours, my laptop crashed. I couldn't use my cell phone. It was all blocked. And I suddenly couldn't get into my bank account. So obviously it was part of that whole concerted attack. It was clearly more than just the COVID authority, somebody launching a general assault on me. And that's more evidence right there, right?
Well, I mean, think about it. If somebody really needs to quarantine with COVID, would you really do this to somebody? I mean, what are we doing? If somebody has COVID, I mean, we know there's all these treatments they're censoring. And if you don't have COVID and they test you, what is going on, right? These people are thugs and they're leading us. And
well, this
go ahead.
Yeah, the thing done, what I realized about all this over the years dealing with these jokers is that, you know, they're not very smart. They're not very original. They think they're God because they got all this power. But you know, you find in history, like when the Roman Empire was falling apart, the people who are making the craziest decisions are the people on top. You know, the military and political decisions of the emperors were becoming increasingly self-destructive. And I find this in society now, that it's the people, you know, these corporate and political bigwigs who think they know everything and can tell people what to do and think is quite the opposite. They really are not in touch with what's going on in their own system. And they're making increasingly erratic and destructive decisions. Like, you know, the example I mentioned, it's fine to go after people who can disappear easily, but I can't. I'm known all over the world. Why in God's name would they go after me, which would just bring more disrepute and exposure on what they're doing? So, you know, it doesn't necessarily make sense. We're not dealing at all with people who are all powerful or all knowing. you know.
Well, they think they are, but they're not. And they're no. Ken Swartz came on and called them morons. And, I really think that's probably about as.
Right. Well, at the same time, I don't want to de-emphasize how dangerous these people are, because the reason, exactly. as I mentioned, that I was targeted was we had been conducting for over 2 years interviews, investigations all over the West Coast of Canada, showing the intrusion of China, Chinese military, yep, Chinese yep. business. And the Trudeau government is directly colluding. They're committing treasonous acts all the time. They pass laws allowing China to station its troops anywhere in Canada to protect their investments. And the whole Trudeau cabinet is in the pro-China lobby, very much. And this Bill Blair, head of public safety, who really was responsible for issuing this COVID order against me, he was one of the chief people named in the indictment, because he and several other politicians who are all former police officers are directly involved with money laundering and organized crime on the West Coast. The Great Canadian Gambling Corporation, it's called, is a chief launderer of West Coast organized crime drug money. And Bill Blair, Senator Larry Campbell, people who have been named over the years, they're all directly involved in this. So naturally, it's a sign that they were afraid of all this information coming out right now. And they know that if the politicians responsible for the COVID measures get discredited, the whole thing falls apart. So naturally, they got to try to shut off this information getting out, right?
Well, because, I am continually surprised at how few people are standing up to this right now. You're one of the main people standing up for it, really giving people courage. But I'm just continually amazed that we're watching our society crumble. And where are all the courageous people stepping up and saying, hey, I don't want our way of life to go away because we have insane people who are hell-bent on destroying it? We need more people stepping up. Why do you think there are so few people that are courageous and willing to step up?
Well, I think people have never had to. We've lived in a pretty affluent society. We've learned that if we play the game, pay our taxes and that, we won't be harmed. Now that's a totally different ballgame. And frankly, the way 85 to 90% of people are raised, it's to not think for themselves. It's not to think they even have the option to govern themselves. They always look to a politician or somebody with more knowledge or authority to do it for them. So it's a real unlearning that has to go on, and you see it happening in small ways. But I mean, I know personally, it took me many years to break from my own conditioning. I had to lose a lot in my life. But the quality in me that didn't give up, that kept going, that's allowed me to get educated and change. People don't last that long. We've been setting up common law assemblies as part of our Republic of Canada movement that's broken away from any allegiance to Canada and the Crown. And when we gather people together in assemblies, they'll do things like pass laws, which we did last September. We passed a national law saying COVID measures are, nullified. They're null and void. They go against the law, against our health and our freedoms. And people pass the laws, and then we say, well, now you have to enforce them. You've got to issue these things. You've got to tell the police to stand down, and everyone falls away. They don't want to do it because they don't want to take the risk. And it's that fear and ignorance that holds people back, right?
Don't you think now not taking the risk is more risky?
Yes, absolutely. And
we've met that line.
That we've crossed a line. We're in a police state, and people, kind of like, you go to war and you talk to vets, the standards they apply to their own life when they're in peacetime were suddenly totally different in times of war. And we have to recognize, first fact, we're at war. And if we don't do anything, it's more dangerous than fighting back.
Exactly. And, it's more than a police state, I would say, because I think we are under a military lockdown kind of scenario. But it's more than a police state because they're actually attacking us in various ways. They're not just taking away our rights. They're actually attacking our livelihoods and our ability to not only, make a living, but also to thrive in a healthy, to be healthy.
Right. And it's all psychological warfare when you think about it. Even the wearing of a mask, which I don't even like to call masks, they're muzzles, right? The muzzle over people's faces, it's like what happens when you go into prison, your head gets shaved, you get dehumanized right away, you become a number. And that's designed to take away any sense of self-reliance, freedom, self-respect. And when you have that thing on your face, you know, you become like a machine. You don't, you're not a human being. You're literally, you're gagged. You can't speak and you lose your identity. Now, when you think about it, to some degree, that's already the way people are in society. They move around like that every day. Now it's just kind of a manifestation of something that they've been a part of for a long time. And, you know, the very fact of taking it off is a declaration of independence. And it's the first step people have to do, right?
Well, and they have been able to tie masks to psychological breaking, you know, breaking people down. Masks have historically been used for that purpose. And they used it in times of war against people they try to break down and try to brainwash or try to, you know, break down, frankly. And so it's been historically used. The scary part is using it on children, because what will that do? And they don't care. I mean, they probably do care. They know what they're doing. It's on purpose.
Yeah, and this has been written about a lot, you know, the fact that you deoxygenate the blood, you're more prone to cancer, to sickness. You know, you create the market for the drugs to come, right? It's the way the market economy works. You got to create a sick population who can buy the drug. And that makes perfect sense economically from the where their system operates. But I mean, what is different is the extent of how pervasive it is, how global it all is, how all the governments walk in lockstep in line with this thing. And that shows it's been prepared for a long time. It isn't just something that's happened. I think it's the logical outgrowth of the system we've been living under, frankly, you know. And at the heart of this, you know, in Canada and in America, is the whole China factor. And I think it's really important to talk about that.
Yeah.
Because it's really not just responsible for what's happened to me recently, but this whole regime, it's, you know, there's this civil war breaking out that is very much funded by China and designed to destabilize. It's like what Sun Tzu says in The Art of War, you defeat an enemy before fighting them by demoralizing them and making them fight each other. And you see that going on all over. It's Chinese, it's like, why the Vietnamese won in Vietnam in the Vietnam War against America. Somebody once said that the Vietnamese were using Sun Tzu in The Art of War, and the American military were thinking like von Clausewitz, you know, typical European military style. You go in and crush the enemy with overwhelming numbers. It doesn't work in a guerrilla warfare, and it defeated America. It's the same thing now. China's thinking outside the box, and they're outthinking, you know, America. And
it comes down to the mind war tactics too, because the military in the United States and actually warfare in general has changed to be more about mind war instead of psychological operations, which was an accessory of war. They've decided that mind war is the war. And that's what we're dealing with, because we're not seeing violence per se, although you could say COVID is violent, but this is one big mind war.
Well, exactly. And you know what, it's really interesting, Sarah. It's kind of like their whole creation is a cyber fiction. When you turn off the internet and look around, you don't see any evidence of illness. People get sick. And I think they're getting sick because of the level of trauma and stress that's crashing their immune system. But I've been going around without a mask for over a year. I have never gotten sick. I'm in my 60s. I have bronchial asthma. You think I would have got sick right away. I mingle with people on the street, with all sorts of people. I never distance. I shake hands. I've never gotten sick with anything. That proves to me it doesn't exist. There's something going on, but it has nothing to do with the communicable virus. And, you know, so there's the evidence of our own life, but then you turn on the, you know, you go into cyber world on the internet and suddenly millions of people are dying from this thing. So it's a matter of getting, like you say, getting your mind out of their bubble and back into reality. And that's what holds people back, because there's still, you know, they all turn on the internet for their source of reality, and it's totally controlled. The internet was a military technology introduced to centralize not just information, but my thinking. People cannot think outside the internet.
Exactly.
So, you know, that's one of the ways they primarily control people.
Well, that's why we've all been shut down. I got censored all over the place and shut down my website. I got it back up in another country, you know, that kind of thing. And it is the mind war, and they know how to do it. And then they know, based on what you search and what you do, what your response to it. So then they respond differently. They've really gotten good at it. But the mainstream media is all in on this as well. So it's just all one big thing. And you're right. What do you see locally? Yeah, there's some sickness out there and doctors are seeing stuff, but it's not. Is it any different than before? Really? Maybe it's a bad flu.
No, it isn't. No,
yeah.
Absolutely no different. And don't forget, really, I often say this to people when we hold our assembly meetings and gatherings, you know, I say, look, nothing is ever done to us. We do it to ourselves. They pass a law. It doesn't become anything unless we cooperate with it. If we don't cooperate with it, it's a piece of paper. And, nothing is ever done to us unless we in some way consent to it. And you withdraw that consent, they have no power. So it's not really a question anymore of what are they going to do to us next. It's a matter of what are we going to do next. We've got to shift our thinking to what are we going to do? What's our next step, right?
And that's what they're scared of, is all of us coming together and saying, enough. This is no. You're going to do this. Just like the treatments. We have treatments for the flu. We can do this, which they're banning and censoring. We say, enough, we're getting these. This is what the people are getting. Enough with the vaccine bullshit. We have the ability to do this. Enough with making things up. We're tired of your lying. We're tired of what you're doing. So I agree with you 100%. And I think because you're out there in the front telling people you have the power, you have the ability to end this, that's what they don't like.
No, as a matter of fact, not only the whole Republic of Canada movement and setting up local self-governing assemblies and common law courts, which we've been doing all over Canada, it's the research I did historically going back to the 1990s. I mean, to give you an example, it's been the law in Canada that you can force vaccinations on Indians on reservation whenever the government wants. They cannot refuse vaccinations or medical treatments or they go to jail. That's been the case in Canada since 1874 with the Indian Act. It's still the case. So I say to people, look, we're all on the reservation now. The same laws they've been using against Indians are now applying to all of us. But what I found out in the course of my research when we began to investigate the Indian hospitals is all of these methods were tried out first on the Indian children in the 60s and 70s and 80s in these Indian hospitals. So it's one of the reasons they don't like my evidence at murderbydecree.com to circulate, because once people find out where something came from, they have power over it. And they want everyone just ignorant and afraid. And those are their two chief weapons, right?
And that's why they don't want the treatments coming out, because the treatments, you should have no fear if you know there's treatments. And the treatments are more effective, less side effects than the stupid vaccine. So that eliminates the fear, and they don't want that. They need people to be fearful. That's why they put on CNN and MSNBC and all this. They have the death count nonstop on the freaking television.
Yeah, it's like I remember during the Vietnam War, I was just a kid, and every night there'd be Walter Cronkite with the CBS News, and they'd have three flags, North Vietnam, South Vietnam, United States, and you have the death count every day, like 1,000 North Vietnamese died, and it always got lower the further went down. 200 South Vietnamese and only 5 Americans died, and it was always that way. And it seemed, even as a kid, I thought, you know, this is not only bullshit, but why are they keep telling people how many died all the time? It's like playing the 9/11 tape over and over and over. Well, you traumatize people, you get the more susceptible. The critical thinking goes out the window and they can be led around by the nose, right?
Well, and they were lying. We're winning. Only 5 U.S. soldiers died, but we killed thousands.
Then how come we lost?
That's what they were doing.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that was evil.
I know.
Okay, so what can people do to help you? I mean, how critical is this? Do you think they're going to – is your arrest imminent, or what do you think? I mean, I'll put nothing past these guys.
It could very well be. And I, first of all, urge people to go to Republic of Canada. So you spell it K-A-N-A-T-A, republicofcanada.ca. You'll see a title on there, Breaking News. And we just posted something today. It says a global appeal to defend Kevin Annett. And there's lots of things we list here that people can do, including right to the three top politicians responsible for these attacks, Prime Minister Trudeau, Governor General Richard Wagner, and Public Safety Minister Bill Blair. All of that information is there. All of our links, you can see that. And so that's the first thing. We've also, you know, it's amazing. I've actually filmed one of the links on there you can see. It's entitled COVID Canada Lies in Print to Kevin. And I take the two emails and I film it and say, look, it's April the 6th, and they're claiming it's April the 12th because they say 10 days have gone by when only four have gone by. So to lie openly in print like that means they either they're crazy or they think they'll get away with it. And the reality is they won't get away from it because, we've already heard that this story is circulating now all over the world, all over Europe. People are writing to Canadian embassies asking what's going on. So it's creating a big backlash that they didn't expect. So I think on that basis, yeah, it's possible for them to pick me up at any time. I'm taking measures to avoid that. But I always say to people, even if that happens, it will backfire on them because once you're in jail, and there is a move now to even adopt me as a political prisoner, an official prisoner of conscience, if that happens, people in Europe are already pushing for that. So, I mean, in a way, it'll help us over the long run. The important thing is for people to carry on this work. It's not about one person. It's about all of us taking responsibility to start acting and pushing back and reestablishing, our self-governance and our freedom.
Yes, exactly. And I saw that you wrote a letter to Putin looking for maybe asylum. Is that something that you're one of the avenues you're going towards?
Well, maybe eventually, although I don't like running.
Yeah, I understand.
This is my country. There's no these politicians are the ones who should be leaving, not me. But what I did do, I wrote to Vladimir Putin because 3 years ago I had sent him a summary of a lot of our evidence. I called it a report on the continuity of genocide in Canada, how it's ongoing. I said it's a security issue for Russia because China is basically taking over Canada lock, stock, and barrel, and with our eyes on America next. And what I said to him is I reiterated the call I made in 2017. I asked him to send Russian peacekeepers and human rights observers to help protect me and to investigate these crimes in Canada. So they've got that now. Putin has it. The diplomatic corps has it. We're waiting for a response.
Well, let's pray for your safety and hope that this will all work out or send positive. Our positive, our thinking, our consciousness really does affect outcomes. And so that's why they're scared of all of us stepping up. So we just have to keep doing that and pounding away at this. And like you said, it's not just about you. It's about all of us coming together.
That's right.
And I just thank you for being such a great leader in that.
Well, thanks, Sarah. And the show today really helps with that because so many of our sources are being shut off. I really appreciate, this interview. And remind people, murderbydecree.com, republicofcanada.ca. And you can also write to me, angelfire101@protonmail.com.
Thank you, Kevin. Keep fighting.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay.
Yep. Bye-bye.
And we're back. That was done just a few days ago with Sarah Westall, our good buddy down in the U.S. of A. And the last 15 or so minutes, I want to explore something else, which is more of the background. You know, I'm always going on about Sun Tzu and the Art of War, and his basic maxim is that you can never win any battle unless you know yourself and know your enemy. And I'm writing a book again. It's kind of a habit I inherited from my father and grandfather. We write. My next book, I'm writing a political biography, and that is looking at the last 50 years and things I've learned and experiences. What's happened in the world over the last 50 years? The rise of the corporatocracy. What does this all come from? And I call it Memoirs of a Revolutionary. And in that, I want to give a bit of background as to what this COVID police state is. And this quote came to mind. And it's about, it was actually quoted in the Globe and Mail newspaper in Canada in 1910. The Christian Women's Societies were explaining why Indian hospitals and schools had to be set up. And it was, quote, get this, to cleanse our society of its diseased elements as quickly and efficiently as possible, unquote. So Indians were seen as a disease. That's how genocide is always described, as a public health measure. And so as soon as you start hearing people in authority talking about, so-called authority, talking about cleaning things up, making people, you know, more immune from a disease, it's not really about a physical virus. It's a political description of protecting you from an element in society and thereby creating a dictatorship to enforce that. And so I really have to emphasize how it's important to go to murderbydecree.com and study that history, because it's where a lot of this stuff comes from. The attempt and the ongoing genocide in Canada and America, and it's the same system around the world, but we have the hard evidence. Like I said earlier, evil has an address, but we name that address. And we give a lot of the hard proof of where this stuff came from. Let me give you an example of that. The Christian death camps in Canada, they still call Indian residential schools, set up very similar to the COVID measures. And again, set up through order and council, never debated in Parliament any more than the COVID measures were. They weren't passed by a court or a legislature any more than COVID measures were. And they were through order and council, which is a privy council, these bureaucrats in Ottawa, who actually write most of the laws in Canada now. Three quarters of all laws passed in Canada when Parliament was open are done order and council. They're just a bunch of bureaucrats writing out the laws they want. And these three, I want to mention these measures that happened between 1910 and 20, because during those years, the Privy Council in London and Ottawa issued these measures against Native people. First of all, they made it mandatory for children to be incarcerated and quarantined in so-called Indian schools on pain of imprisonment. Secondly, they abolished all medical inspection in these places, despite an enormous death rate of over 60% that had already been documented. It even appeared on the front page of the Ottawa Citizen newspaper, November 15, 1907. We have that. You can see it at murderbydecree.com. Third measure, they stripped Indians of the right to sue in court, hire a lawyer, or petition the government for any kind of grievance. So once those measures were in that restricted the rights, then the explicitly genocidal measures followed very soon after that. For example, laws allowing the involuntary sexual sterilization of any Indian, especially if they didn't go to church. I've spoken to survivors who said, oh, yeah, I kept speaking my language and I wouldn't go to church, so I had to report for a procedure. They put me under an X-ray machine for 15 minutes over my pelvis, and I couldn't have kids after that. Same methods used by the Nazis in Europe. In like anywhere in the world, these sterilization methods used. One of the chief indicators of genocide is preventing births. People openly talking about how this went on in church and government-funded Indian hospitals right up to the 1990s, and of course still going on through vaccines and pharmaceutical measures. So all of these measures, sterilization, medical experimentation, forced vaccination, all of that followed these orders in council, these restrictive orders exactly like the COVID measures. And when people say you have to do it, say, well, show me the law that I have to do it. There is no law. It's one bureaucrat in Ottawa saying, suffocate yourself. Unfortunately, people do it. Now, making those connections, it's, again, important to look at the big picture. It's all about creating a permanently dominated slave population. And people talk about death camps in European history and all this. Really what those were about, it wasn't simple oppression. It was creating a new kind of society where people are permanently stateless. They have no rights. You can do whatever you want to them. And it also changes the slave population psychologically. It removes any possibility of escape. Just like now, you can't escape these COVID measures. You can't escape the concentration camp. There's nowhere to go. You've got to learn to adapt to it. And as a result, the slave population, that's us, we regulate ourselves into our own servitude because we're in a permanent state of fear. And because of that, we'll line up to get on the cattle cards. Will voluntarily quarantine and vaccinate. This is a result of the environment we're in, a permanent prison environment. But the prison starts in our own heads. I call that the epidemiology of domination. And it's interesting because there's this quote, a really good book, The Cunning of History, where all of the genocides in European history are really traceable to Rome and the so-called Christian tradition. And here's a quote from Rubinstein in his book. The culture that made the death camps possible was not only indigenous to the West, but came out of its fundamental religious tradition of separating humanity into the damned and the saved. And when you do that, You know, when some are not worthy of life, then it leads directly to what we have now. And what happened right where I speak to tens of thousands of little children whose bodies are still in the ground, and any attempt to talk about those gets you in deep trouble now, even though we surfaced all the proof of that over many years. So, moving right along, I want to mention also somebody very key to this. His name was Jeremy Bentham. He was an English philosopher. He invented the philosophical schools called utilitarianism in England in the early 19th century. Utilitarianism is really what is our dominant mindset nowadays. It says nothing is important unless it has a practical application and outcome. So history isn't important. Everything has to be practical. And Bentham created this thing called the Panopticon, which, being a Freemason, he took it from their all-seeing eye. That's what the Panopticon is. It means all-seeing eye. And what it is, it was his design for how prisons should be operated. So everybody in the prison, it's like this circular prison, and everybody is constantly being monitored by a central tower. So the prisoners think they're always being observed, and as a result, they lock themselves in every night. They monitor themselves because they might get in trouble. Well, look around your typical street in a city. How many cameras can you count? People are kept in line because of the fear of a consequence. And we know when we push the limit and you ignore these things, you're rarely ever troubled or arrested or hassled. But you think you might be, so you control yourself. Well, this is Jeremy Bentham's model of a panopticon. And he said, let me be really clear about this. He said, not only should prisons be run this way, but all of society should be run this way, because of an omnipresent and watchful authority that compels the prisoners to be obedient and self-regulating. What does that sound like? It's exactly what we're in right now. So his panopticon model was really the basis of modern society, and that's what's going on. Well, don't forget, domination always begins in the minds of the dominated. No repressive state measure will be operational or workable without our cooperation. We transform a paper statute into a fact of life. We do it. They don't do it to us. And I find this again and again in our work in Republic assemblies. We say, okay, people, now we got to take action. And they won't, because it means they might have to go up in their own mind against the authority that's run them their whole life. And that's the unlearning that has to go on. Now, the amazing thing about the last year, folks, is that it's given anyone with a critical mind amazing opportunities to observe how this thing is working. And part of the problem is that there's been this creation of this idea that there's an omnipresent power in the world that's commanding this. And again, Sun Tzu, he says, excellence consists of defeating an enemy without fighting him by first demoralizing him. We have to be made to think that the system is irresistible and all-powerful. Well, every time we defy it, we see that breaks down. And, you know, when we used to do occupations of Catholic, Anglican, and United Churches for their crimes against humanity, we'd go in there. We never got hassled. The police would show up. We would tell them what we were doing. We said we have the legal right to be here because these are taxpayer-supported churches, public space. They committed crimes of genocide. If you support them and block our protest, you're aiding and abetting a crime, we would say to the police. And every time they backed down. And they were frightened by that because we showed that their system is illusory. The power mostly consists in our own mind, their power, and you negate it by your own action. Now, that's not to say the present global corporatocracy doesn't have a lot of power, because it's merged all of these tendencies that have been going on for many years. You've got the merger of monopoly capitalism, bureaucratic state managerialism, and technocratic fascism. It's all come together with a single aim: the extermination of Homo sapiens and the replacement with Homo machina, or machine man, machine woman. And that's evident, as we talked about in the Sarah Westall interview. That's what the mask or muzzle does. It dehumanizes us, prepares us psychologically to be seen and to see ourselves as part of the machine. Again, that falls apart every time you defy it. And that's why individual defiance, linked up with others in your community through these assemblies, are so essential. That's really what we've been building towards the Republic. That's what our actions consist of all the time. Well, you know, the final point I want to make about this, because we only get about 5 minutes left, and we'll carry this on again next week, but the difficulty of this global corporatocracy is the buck never seems to stop anywhere. There doesn't seem to be an ultimate authority. Like you try, as I mentioned in the interview, you try to call up somebody in the system and you can't talk to anybody because the system is this monolithic thing where there aren't human beings part of it anymore. It's like this machine that's set on automatic pilot. And so there never seems to be accountability. People cry for accountability, but that's the old system of liberal capitalism and so-called democracy, right? The system needed that once. It doesn't need it anymore. And so any idea of accountability and getting the system, you know, you hold a protest and demand things, that's dinosaur thinking. That's out the window, people. We have to replace the present system by not cooperating in it. And, you know, I had a foretaste of this all the time when I was being defrocked by the United Church. The way the church sets itself up, there's no level of authority that's ultimately accountable. One group of level of the church will hire you, another will monitor you, another will ordain you. That's because they're preparing for lawsuits so that nobody can ultimately be sued and held accountable. That's how guilty institutions operate. Well, it's the same in government, same in corporations. It operates that now, way now. That's what a corporatocracy is. I mean, don't forget the original model of the corporation set up in Rome in 317 AD was the Roman Catholic Church, the Church of Rome. Corporate structure is designed to remove liability. The normal human liability we have for our own actions to one another, that's removed in a corporation. Corporate officers have, that's what LTD means, limited. They have limited liability. Suddenly they're not human beings anymore. They can go commit crime and then run behind the shelter of the corporation and not be held accountable for it. Corporations are set up to do crime legally, whether they're churches, governments, the present system, you know, it's all set up that way. So we have to awaken to what we're in, and that's the big step. And once we awaken, people might have that abstract knowledge, but then putting it into practice, that's the challenge. That's what we're always about. I'm going to leave it there because, you know, there's a lot more, but I don't have time, unfortunately, anymore today. But please come back on the 25th, same time, same place. Do background study in this. There's a wealth of documented hard evidence. We have on murderbydecree.com, all the links there. This program, bbsradio.com/herewestand. All of our shows over the last 6 years are all archived at that site. Just scroll down that page and you'll see all of them going back to 2015 when we set up the Republic. And we'll come back next week. Again, in closing, send in contributions, write angelfire101@protonmail.com. We need your funds. You know, for many years I've been out there for all of you, all the time on an unpaid basis because it's the right thing to do. Now it's time for a bit of payback, for a bit of you feeding me now and supporting me because I'm up front with other people whose names either can't be mentioned or who have passed on because of giving the ultimate, you know, paying the ultimate price for doing this. We're prepared to do this, but we need your backing. So send your help. Republicofcanada.ca, murderbydecree.com. We're back next week. Stay strong, stay clear. We're going to end on a great song from the 60s, Carry It On. Thank you, brothers and sisters.